All right, we're going to go on to case 4, and that is 082143, Ogbolumani versus Chertoff.
Not yet, Mr. Wilma.
Okay.
May it please the court. My name is Scott Banning, and I represent the appellants, David and Lacey Ogbolumani, in their appeal of the district court's granting of summary judgment and a motion to dismiss, upholding the USCIS's arbitrary and capricious decision to deny Lacey's I-130 visa petition filed on behalf of her husband.
Could I get something clear immediately, please?
Sure.
It's this. The government seems to think that you have conceded that a statutory presumption of a fraudulent marriage applies here. Do you concede that?
Yes, there is a statutory presumption of marriage fraud in all marriage cases. However, we claim that...
That all marriage cases are only those that are trying to get into the country.
Only those that are trying to get into the country, Your Honor.
Good. I feel much more comfortable.
Okay. Anyways, this decision by the USCIS should be overturned because the USCIS failed to follow its very own regulations that were designed to safeguard against such arbitrary and capricious decision-making. This not only violates the Administrative Procedures Act, but also violates Lacey's constitutionally protected due process rights.
See, David and Lacey didn't seem to have any difficulty establishing the bona fides of their own marriage. So why couldn't they have made a similar showing as the first marriage, if indeed that was a legitimate marriage?
Well, David and Lacey also had additionally had a child together, which Jamila Cooper, David's first wife, and David did not have. Furthermore, a significant part of this investigation were the important claims by Jamila and by Jamila's family, supposedly substantiating a claim of marriage fraud, weren't made until after David and Jamila had divorced and after David and Jamila had remarried and had a child with another woman. As at the time that these adverse statements were made, it would have been very difficult for David to secure any help from Jamila, as well as Jamila was at a state where she was in no mood to be kind to her ex-husband, who had already moved on with his life. Now, the district court erred in denying Lacey's constitutional due process claim on a motion to dismiss, as it erroneously held that Lacey did not have any protected constitutional interests. To the contrary, Lacey has important liberty as well as property interests with respect to the fair and just adjudication of her I-130 petition on behalf of her husband. According to Ali versus INS, the District Court of Massachusetts had stated that when a government undertakes to investigate and determine the validity of a marriage is threatening an aspect as fundamental as a couple's decision about procreation, about contraception, and private sexual behavior, an interest that originates in the Constitution itself. It's important to remember here that if this decision by the USCIS is allowed to stand, David will have no defense to a deportation proceeding, as he is not in the country in any lawful status currently, and he'll be previously found to have engaged in a fraudulent marriage in order to obtain immigration benefits. This will face Lacey with the impossible and very difficult choice with whether to uproot her life as well as her daughter's and move to Nigeria to be with David, where she won't have any family, doesn't have any friends, and won't be familiar with the culture or the nearly 200 languages that are spoken there. On the other hand, she would have the choice of remaining in the United States, a continent and ocean apart from her husband, and an ocean and continent apart from her daughter's father. Such a situation that Lacey would be placed in certainly affects the constitutionally protected liberty interests, such as the decision on how to direct the education and upbringing of one's children, the right to have children, and certainly the right to marry. The Supreme Court has recognized the importance of these rights in Landon versus Placencia, where it stated that a citizen or alien's right to stay, live, and work in the United States, and the right to rejoin family are rights that rank high among the interests of an individual. Now, Lacey also has statutorily created property interests with respect to the fair adjudication of her I-130 petition. The Supreme Court has stated in Matthews versus Eldridge that property interests may be created by statute and then by positive rules of law. In this case, the USCIS promulgated regulations that were designed to ensure some level of due process and accurate decision-making here. And David and Lacey are entitled that these regulations be followed. Now, for these reasons, the district court's motion to dismiss must be overturned because Lacey does have constitutionally protected interest in the fair and just adjudication of her I-130 petition. Moreover, for a constitutional claim to survive a motion to dismiss, it simply needs to be colorable, meaning that the violation need not be substantial or alleged substantial, but the claim must have some possible validity. And here, David and Lacey's claim is more than colorful, as they have showed that the USCIS has failed to follow many of its regulations that were designed to safeguard against such arbitrary and capricious decision-making, as well as to provide some level of due process. For example, the USCIS relied on evidence that they did not produce to David or Lacey prior to making their final decision in this matter. And additionally, the USCIS relied on evidence that was not contained within the alien's administrative file. Both of these failures to follow the USCIS regulations not only deprived David and Lacey of their statutorily created due process interests, but also make the decision arbitrary and capricious, and thus being required to remand under the Administrative Procedures Act. Now, the government also failed to obtain signed and sworn statements from key adverse witnesses in this case, which amounts to another violation of due process. In this case, the government only obtained a summary of a statement made by Jamiller to an investigator, which stated that David had paid for her education as a part of her marriage arrangement. In this case, the government did not obtain any signed statements or sworn affidavits from Jamiller clarifying this statement. We suggest that the government should have, and is to protect David and Lacey's important due process interests here, obtained at least a signed statement or affidavit from Lacey. In this case, the risk of an erroneous deprivation of David's rights, or Lacey's rights, is clear by the vagueness of this summarized statement. The statement doesn't say that Lacey or that Jamiller married David solely for money. It does not say that Jamiller did not love David. It does not say that Jamiller did not intend to establish a life with David.
You're in your rebuttal time, you know.
Okay. Well, based on these, that David or Lacey had constitutionally protected rights and that these rights were violated, we believe that decision should be reversed because they presented a colorable constitutional claim. Thank you.
Hey. Morning, Mr. Oswald.
Your Honor, may it please the court, counsel. Let me start with the plea to sympathy, which I can understand because it's an individual that's been here since 1990, and counsel has said that that he'll have no rights in deportation proceedings. The marriage fraud amendments were originally sponsored by Senator Simon. It was a whole statutory scheme that was designed to eliminate people taking advantage of the marriage fraud amendments. It prohibits another visa petition from being filed, but it doesn't necessarily prohibit him from being eligible for everything else. He's now married to a United States citizen. Nobody really contests that marriage. Judge, as you pointed out, I mean, one of the points that we have here is there's an entire record. You know, it's kind of like compare what he did with Lacey with what he did with Jamiller. There's a, you know, what he did with Lacey, there's a whole course of conduct. There's transactions, financial transactions. Everything shows that there's an involvement in their lives, that their lives are intermingled, and that they are husband and wife. If you then look at Jamiller, it's a couple of pages about a bank account that's open with no course of any transactions. It's a lease agreement that one could easily have done, and there's not really clear that they ever really did reside there. And there's nothing that was in any of that course of transactions that made it look when they came in to the immigration authorities, and this is an interview that's given after the individual is given a notice that says, come in with pictures, come in with photographs, come in with all of your documentation that you have. They show up, and it didn't go well. And that's what launched an investigation into the case. And all of those things in terms of this is a marriage fraud, this part of the marriage fraud doesn't...
Is it unusual to go out and conduct surveillance in cases like that? I've not seen that happen.
That's because you never saw Green Card.
Oh. Yes, Green Card I did see. That's a very good movie. This is seemed to me a little unusual given the pretty strong evidence, I think, that the first marriage to Jamiller was not on the up and up.
Well, it depends, Judge, at what point it looks like it's not up and up. When they walked in to begin with, I think immigration officials look at these things with a healthy degree of skepticism. If the two parties come in, they don't really seem to know each other, and it doesn't pass immediate. This looks like a strong marriage, and it's likely that this is okay. Then it is customarily referred to investigation. And there are two different types of investigation. One could be a civil investigation, and it also could have criminal consequences, which is some of the reasons where there's some kind of interlapse. Not that this turned into a criminal case, but this is not, when she's making these statements, she is also liable. If she received money, she could be prosecuted for this. So that's not something that's that unusual. In terms of what was done. I couldn't give you a percentage in terms of surveillance, but when they went out, it didn't start necessarily as surveillance. It went interviews to a residence and interviews to neighbors. That's a fairly customary thing. If it doesn't immediately pass a test of, you know, where the investigator thinks this is legitimate, and it didn't. And then there's a course of conduct. They go out into the field. They go to a house which they've done a database check, and that database says that this individual is living at that address. The sister-in-law says, she was paid cash. This is a sham. She was paid $5,000 to do that. They then go out. And they go and they do further investigation in terms of trying to corroborate that they live together. There's no evidence from any neighbors. There's no evidence from any friends. They go and talk to David himself, who makes the statement, "I felt I had no other way to obtain my immigration benefits. I did what I felt I had to do. You are intelligent people, and basically I have my head on a platter. However, I can't bring myself to mouth the words that will destroy any remaining hope that I may have." The counsel, I understand he's trying to represent his client. He's trying to do a good job, and he's done a very good job in terms of raising a number of issues. But to explain that away, that he's confronted with evidence that he's paid $5,000 to marry this individual, and then he says, "My head is on a platter," and we're supposed to believe that that was because he was talking about getting an employment authorization. And it just doesn't pass any test to me. And then nothing comes forward. There's an entire, even at that point when there's a notice of intent to deny, he doesn't come forward with any additional evidence that proves anything other than that the district court was correct in believing that this is a rational decision and was not arbitrary and capricious. And therefore, we would ask that the district court be affirmed.
Where's the evidence in the certified administrative record that he claimed he was single on his health insurance forms?
I believe I can grab a judge, I've got it marked here.
Okay.
On page 178 of the certified administrative record, there is an agent on 8/22 of 2000. This agent contacted his employer. He has been employed as a full-time employee by Tech Systems for approximately 3 years. He has claimed single status on all withholding and insurance forms during this time. She stated he has married two or three weeks ago, but has not updated his insurance or withholding records. That's part of the administrative record that was filed. Mr. Tardif from our office was the one who originally handled that. I confirm that because I know counsel has raised a number of things that says that these weren't included in the record. Every single time that I've done it, I find some reference. Now, maybe the other one that he cites is that concerning the individual, this Clivester Robinson, and that one, there's a part of that that was referred to on page 171 of the administrative record. So this was all part of that record and is part of the memorandum that they did in the investigation, and that the notice of intent here to deny was very specific and gave them the full opportunity to do that. Again, this is not against Lacey or the second marriage. We are not contesting that. But it's not Lacey that was involved in this first marriage, which Jim Miller was a part of.
Is there some validity to the point that David and Lacey couldn't respond to some of the points, for example, the amount of money in David and Jamilier's joint bank account, if that point wasn't disclosed in the government's notice of intent?
That Judge, gets back to the argument that I think we made in the brief about the bank account, which isn't we're denying this thing because it's about the bank account. The point in the bank account is back to compare the petitioning procedure for Lacey vis-a-vis the petitioning procedure for Jim Miller. That part of it was not referred to. It just says there was very scant evidence that was involved. It wasn't you didn't have this. We made the argument. You don't even, when you come up with a one-page letter that says you've opened a bank account on this date and it's got this amount in it, that really doesn't tell you much. It's not like bank statements. It's not a course of conduct with checks that are being written, joint bills that are being conducted. It's just basically, this is it. And when you come up with, and that's the only thing you show, that really isn't very, that doesn't really meet their burden of showing we're husband and wife, we're carrying on a life together.
Mr. Fanning is right, isn't he? I mean, he goes back.
Pardon? That he goes back? No, I don't necessarily agree that is true. He's been here for more than 10 years.
Yeah.
Well, Judge, there's a relief call. I mean, we're in the district court. This is challenging the visa denial. Then, assuming that he doesn't have a status, he would be placed in the removal proceedings.
Right.
In removal proceedings, he's then eligible to apply for forms of relief. One form of relief that he's eligible to apply for, from everything I know, is cancellation of removal. That is somebody who's been here for more than 10 years. He's been here more than 10 years. He apparently has some health problems. He apparently is married to a United States citizen. He's apparently, and he certainly has a United States citizen child. Those are things he's all entitled to bring up as discretionary relief. I've made a mistake. This is something that I did that was wrong. But to sit there and deny it, that, and I know, Judge, you know, you have a difficult time with some of these, you know, when we have situations, but that is what the mechanism is that you talk about in terms of taking into these, what discretion is and what, you know, where the sympathy, I think, lies, and not in terms of this interpreting this provision just because it's a difficult and harsh result. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, what do you think about what Mr. Oswald said?
Well, first of all, with respect to any potential relief David may have in deportation proceedings with respect to cancellation, that is, again, a purely discretionary form of relief up to the immigration judge, where David won't have any opportunity to appeal that decision if the relief isn't granted his way. Furthermore, this
what he's saying is leave it to our tender mercies and we will take care of your boy. Doesn't inspire you with a sense of confidence, does it?
No, not in this case, Your Honor. Next, with respect to Clivester Robinson Sr.'s statement that's contained within the Notice of Intent to Deny, which in the Notice of Intent states that this Clivester Robinson Sr. had stated that his son had been dating Jim Miller before, during, and after David's marriage with Jim Miller. Now, no such statement is contained within the administrative file. There is a statement from Mr. Clivester Robinson Sr. that states his son had dated.
You know, I honestly don't understand the import of all of that anyway, since something like 50% of all married couples seem to have other friends, according to what I read in the beauty parlor.
I understand.
Not me.
You're not 50%.
Oh, I understand that, Your Honor. However, the USCIS and the district director seemed fit to put that in their notice of intent to deny as one reason in denying Lacey's I-130 petition. Furthermore, the supposed statement by David about his head being on a platter and having no other choice, again, the failure here to obtain any kind of sworn statements, tape recordings, or signed affidavits from David, call into question the vagueness of these statements and the surrounding circumstances. Again, counsel for the government has stated that there could be criminal consequences here. And as such, David is entitled to more than just mere summaries of conversations that he may have had with the investigator. Thank you, Your Honor.
Maybe we should ask Mr. Oswald, who's very fair looking at this case and seems to say that it's all one big government here, that your client has been here 18, 19 years and now has looks like a very legitimate marriage, a child, bad health, why the government, through the U.S. Attorney's Office, wouldn't be agreeable to joining in a motion to withhold deportation, cancellation of removal.
They haven't done that yet.
It's a very, very good fellow over here. Maybe he'd be happy to do
that. Two wonderful fellows.
Absolutely wonderful.
At least one.
That would two.
I wouldn't necessarily. I'd have to check with them. Again, this is a discretionary form of relief. And
sure.
The gist of this is that
your authority doesn't extend to this.
That would be correct.
Out of your pay grade, yeah.
And when you have this, though, I mean, it is a form of relief before the immigration judge. But if he loses that, it's not that that's the end of it. He then takes it to the Board of Immigration Appeals, and then he comes back to your court. And
to me,
this would be something that if they don't like the appeal, they would say if you've denied discretionary relief, then it comes back to you. So I'm trying to avoid the. But that's where it would come to, and that's the process.
Yeah. I don't know. It just seems like it's a big waste of time. We've got 300 million people in this country anyhow, and this guy doesn't seem like he's too bad, and he's got a legitimate marriage and health problems and all that. Why don't you go out in the hall and agree on how to handle it?
If we gave you 30 days to go back to your superiors and send us a status report on whether or not there could be such an agreement. You know, the holidays are coming. It's going to get worse and worse around here.
And I understand. I would be happy to do that. But with all due respect, we're light years ahead of this. This should be sent to a body that's used to adjudicating these cases.
But we know these bodies. That
I don't know of anybody that
they would send me back if only they could.
By gollies, I never thought of
it. Oh.
What they're trying to do, what they're afraid of doing, is setting a precedent. That's why they won't do it. It's a relatively simple thing.
There's not any incident. I have no authority to grant it.
No, we know that.
Oh, yes.
Nor do I have any ability to sit there and to read. I understand from reading this, this gentleman seems to be fine. I haven't stepped through a documentation. I don't know what records checks might be. I don't know any of that.
Yeah. No, we've put you in a difficult spot, but we don't care that we've put you.
I understand.
See, she'd send you back too.
No, but otherwise, 2 years from now, these things take forever, and 2 years from now, you're going to be in front of an immigration judge who's going to say, raise these same questions.
But Judge, I don't think it's that simple. Immigration authorities, there are going to be a bunch of people in immigration that would say. I don't mean to characterize this to say what he's done they would take lightly. I mean, they'll say he's committed fraud. He has committed fraud. He doesn't deserve this waiver. And he is then entitled to raise all these issues. I'm not saying that even I would say, he might seem to be good, but that the fraud is extremely serious. And that would be something that they would raise. And then he would have the ability to say, been here a long time, I've got a lot of equities, and look at it that way. I don't think it's a clear-cut case, and I don't think that adjudicating it, I think that we should allow the process to go forward instead of trying to short-circuit it because the case is here on another issue.
I Maybe you're right, but it just seems to me that we make these things a lot more complicated than they ought to be.
We took up some of your time, didn't we?
Yes. One last thing I'd like to add is, you know, this isn't just about David remaining in the country. It's also about Lacey's right to substantiate and submit her marriage to David, to the USCIS, and obtain an I-130 petition, and that she was denied the protections afforded by the USCIS in the adjudication of this petition, making it arbitrary and capricious and at least a colorable claim for a violation of constitutional due process.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you. Oh, my case will be taken under advisement.